Now, turning to the United States, where President Biden has come out strongly with Israel, condemning the move by the prosecutor at the International Criminal Court to seek arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his defense minister. There is no equivalence, he said, none between Israel and Hamas. And he went on to say the Israeli military assault on Gaza in the wake of the October 7th Hamas attacks is not genocide. Our Washington correspondent, Sean Whelan, has been telling me more about US reaction to that decision by the ICC to seek warrants against Israeli officials as well as three Hamas leaders. President Biden was speaking at a Jewish event in the Rose Garden of the White House.
Well, he made a couple of interventions during the day. The one that got quoted most was the word outrageous. The single word outrageous was his reaction to the issuing of those arrest warrants by the prosecutor. As you say, he did speak to Jewish American organizations at an event in the White House and again said it was completely wrong of the International Criminal Court to issue the indictments. He said they had no jurisdiction over the state of Israel. But the thing that has really annoyed the American administration is what they call the equivalence with Hamas, and saying that a state like Israel is absolutely not equivalent to a terrorist organization like Hamas. They should not be put out in the same indictment on the same day by the same court. President Biden went further in that meeting with the Jewish leaders here in the United States, saying that what was going on in Gaza is not genocide, and we, the American administration, reject that. And he said that Israel, the United States, will stand with Israel and will supply them with whatever they need. He said they want to see Yahya Sinwar, the leader of Hamas, and the rest of what he called the butchers of Hamas, defeated by Israel, and will supply them with whatever equipment and support is necessary for that to happen.
And his comments, of course, echoed as well by other US officials throughout the day.
Yeah, there's been quite a lot of stuff. The Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, again, saying that he absolutely rejected the notion of any kind of parallel between the state of Israel and the Hamas organization. Also, the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, was in the region at the very time that these indictments were being issued, meeting with one of the indictees, Yoav Gallant, the defense minister in Israel. No direct comments from Mr. Sullivan, but the spokesperson for the State Department, again, absolutely rejecting any kind of parallels between Israel and Hamas, and again, stressing that the United States is going to support Hamas to do whatever it takes, will support Israel to do whatever it takes to defeat Hamas. So there looks like there's been a hardening of attitudes here in the United States in reaction to the issuing of those warrants by the prosecutors at the International Criminal Court.
Sean, I want to turn as well to the Donald Trump hush money trial. It was a dramatic day yesterday. What happened?
Very dramatic day. Probably the most dramatic that we've had in the 19 days of this trial. The gist of it, I mean, Donald Trump's main accuser, Michael Cohen, finished his very lengthy evidence. He's done something like 17 hours in the witness box. He had suffered a reverse, if you recall, last week, where he'd been accused of lying to the judge and jury in the case. He came out a little bit better out of that one because this revolved around a phone call that he'd made to Keith Schiller, Donald Trump's bodyguard. And the prosecution had said that was the phone call in which Trump had given the go-ahead for the hush money payments to be made to Stormy Daniels. The defense team working for Donald Trump said, no, no, all the texts around that message suggest that it was you, Michael Cohen, trying to get help to get rid of a crank caller who turned out to be a 14-year-old kid. Cohen's defense was, well, you know, we had a 90-second phone call, but we could deal with the two issues in one. I called Keith, told him about the kid, and asked him to pass the phone to Donald Trump. And the prosecution came in with evidence of a videotape and stills from that showing Keith Schiller and Donald Trump both together on a stage or leaving a stage at a rally just minutes, literally 4.5 minutes before that 90-second phone call was made. So that does link Trump and Schiller, puts them in the same place. So it is possible that the phone call did deal with these two bits of business and may or may not have been a lie. That's up to the jury to decide on that one. More dramatically, though, in yesterday's testimony, prosecutors dug into the, or defenders for Donald Trump dug into the $420,000 that Michael Cohen was paid by the Trump or Donald Trump in recompense for his outlay of the $130,000 to Stormy Daniels, plus his own fees, plus expenses, plus grossed up for tax money. But it also turns out that in that, Cohen had siphoned off or stole, as the prosecutors or the defense team put it, $60,000 from Trump or the Trump organization, involving him underpaying a technology company which had done some polling work for Trump. They said he'd goosed up the polling figures, fiddled with the polling figures to make it look like Trump was doing better in opinion polls than he actually was. Cohen didn't pay them the full amount of money that they were due and effectively stole it from the Trump organization. That was seen as a big gotcha moment in the trial yesterday, but he did finish up his evidence there. And the prosecution rested their case, and the defense had very little additional testimony to call. They did call one other witness, a guy called Rob Costello, and that's where things really kicked off in the courtroom, because Costello, a very seasoned lawyer in New York, started having arguments with the judge. There were constant interventions by lawyers, objection sustained, etc., etc. And then eventually the judge had enough of Costello and his interventions and ordered the court to be cleared of all the journalists, and the two of them had at it, the judge telling him that he couldn't behave in the outrageous way in which he was behaving in the courtroom, and that he'd be held in contempt if he carried on. And there was only a very short passage that occurred in the courtroom after the journalists were allowed back in. But things were extremely tense. A lot of the reporters who were present in court said they'd never seen anything like it before. They've never been in a court where a judge has kicked the media out in order to tear strips off one of the witnesses in the case. So it was an extremely tense occasion. The only good news, I suppose, to come from it is that there's likely to be very little additional testimony offered in this case. We're expecting maybe another hour with Rob Costello on the stand today. And that might be it, folks. This case might be heading to the jury fairly soon, but because we're coming into a bank holiday weekend in America and the way the court cases fall here, it mightn't be until next Tuesday before the jury actually gets to start their deliberations in this case.
And that's all for now from our Washington correspondent, Sean Whelan.